I want to share a few thoughts with you about the untold story. Now, in that passage that Paul wrote to Timothy, and he was trying to encourage Timothy, because Timothy was going to be one of the new leaders in the early church. And he said that he knew that Timothy knows the story well, had been reading the scriptures, and his parents and his grandmother in particular had been reading him the scriptures, and he knew the story. And I want to talk about the story that has changed, and we have an old hymn in the United Church called "Tell Me the Old Story." And some of you may have sang this song. You probably have lots of times. But part of the course is, "Tell me the old, old story of Jesus and his love." And this morning I want to talk about how the story has changed, not in its contents, but more in its proclamation. The old, old story has really become now the untold story of our time, because we don't hear about the story as much anymore, particularly if you're a person that's outside the church. In 1965, there was a movie that came out. It was called The Greatest Story Ever Told. And it was a story about the life of Jesus and the Jesus of Nazareth, and there was all these stars in it. And it had mixed reviews. Some people thought it was a great film. Others thought it was a waste of time, a really boring story that everybody knew. And from that point on, it seemed that the story started to fade from the mindset of the culture in particular. And so I want to talk about this decline of the Christian story. It changed because the culture changes, and culture always changes. As I mentioned in our vision meetings, what happened is about 50, 70 years ago, the culture began to change. At one time, the church was the center of the community, and everybody was connected with the church. In those days, there was no shopping on Sunday, and everybody was focusing on that spiritual part of life. But as we kind of went along, the church got displaced, and now we live on the outside of the culture. There are more people going to Costco this morning and the casino this morning then there will be people who come and worship. And the story of the Christian faith is just beginning to fade. And it's not our fault, and we know the story, or we know the stories that we have heard, but it's an issue that we want to be addressing as the church. Another reason for the decline is that as more and more kids were growing up after the war, and there was that sort of baby boomer burst, there were more colleges and more schools built. You might remember in your communities all the schools that started building everywhere. And then in the 80s and the 90s, all those schools started to close or be sold. And at that time, there was a shift in our culture from faith to science. And we thought that science was the answer, that science had the answer to all the questions of life. And people started depending less upon their faith in God and more about having faith in each other and in the sciences that we have developed. And because of that, there was this decline. Now, the church responded to that by trying to move to what was called a shift from proclaiming the old story or the Christian story to beginning to try to produce programs that would attract people. And it was an interesting strategy, and we thought that what we need to do is not talk about our faith, but to design programs that would attract people to come to the church and to help them develop their faith. Attraction model didn't work that well. And so now it's our opportunity to shift once again and respond to this part of the culture that doesn't know the story. And the shift is by becoming prepared to retell the story. Do we change the story? We just need to retell the story, because out there, there's generations and individuals that have no awareness of the Christian story at all. Back in the days when you went to school, right? Remember way back then? You know, you got there in the morning, you got all your coats off. The first thing you did was what? Lord's Prayer and the National Anthem, right? You stood up and you said, God save the Queen back in those days, way back there. That just shows you where we are. And then we would recite the Lord's Prayer. And everybody who ever went to school, both in the Catholic system and the public system, knew the Lord's Prayer off by heart. And that began to change. And so the story started slipping away. Today we have literally thousands and thousands of people who do not know the biblical story. If you think about grandchildren, for instance, most of our grandchildren do not know the Christian story, which is a very interesting fact, because if we assume that everybody here has three grandchildren, now not everybody does, I have eight, but some don't have any, right? But if we assume that everybody here has three grandchildren or children, that, and let's assume we have 80 people here, what's the math there? That's 240 people, right? 240 children who do not know the story of Christ. And then if you multiply that from one congregation to all the people out there, and you literally have hundreds of thousands of children under the age of 10 that do not know the story, because the story is not told if they're not connected to a church. And most people between the ages of 25 and 50 are not connected to the church. And so there's this great swath of people out there that give us the opportunity now to find a way to retell the story. We tell the story for the purpose of helping people understand what this story is all about and what its meaning and what its purpose is. Because the biblical story does have a very profound purpose. It's there to help them to rediscover something that they didn't realize was as significant as it could be. And we tell a story so that people will begin to understand that the biblical stories are a resource for life. As I was telling the kids, it is a guidebook. It is a way to guide us in a healthy and positive way. And that's what the biblical story is all about. It's not about good guys and bad guys. It's about how God wants everyone to experience a rich and full life and a healthy life with one another and with God. And that's what the vision is all about. It's looking at how we're going to re-engage the community and retell the story in a healthy and positive way, not in a threatening way, not in, do you know Jesus? If you're not, you're going to hell in a handbasket. Not that threatening way, but in a healthy and positive way, because it's an incredibly fascinating story, and that's what I want to share with you this morning. The Bible is really a storybook. In the Bible there are, here's a free cookie if you know how many Bible books there are. How many? 52? 66, that's right, very good. Free cookie to all those that knew 66, all right? So there's these 66 books that were written by over 40 different authors over 1,500 years of time, and one of the most profound things about the biblical material is the consistency of the message from beginning to end. And so it's an incredibly powerful message, and the story of the Bible has one theme and has two kind of bookend stories. The first story, it's in the very first chapter in the book of Genesis, it's the story of creation in paradise. And it's meant to help people understand that the initial intention was creation was to be working in a unity and a harmony together. And that God created the universe and created humankind for the purpose to be in oneness together, in oneness with creation, and in oneness with God. And that healthy lives are lives that encounter this oneness and harmony in its totality, with creation, with one another, and with God. Now, if you flip to the very opposite end of the Bible, to the book of the Revelations, in the 21st chapter, it talks about this paradise that is coming, this new heaven and new earth that is going to come when Christ returns. And once again, it's going to be a time of incredible unity, a time of peace where there is this harmony once again between humankind and each other and humankind and God. And so these are the bookend stories of the Bible that holds the whole story together. And in between these two, there's all kinds of incredible stories that speak about the relationship between humankind and God. And one of the things that the story throughout the Bible consistently says is that you don't have to worry because God has agreed to be in covenant with us and will never let us go. Now, there's challenging stories when people make mistakes, but the common theme is that God is always present with God's people. Now, you have to pick it up in some of the metaphors, and some of the big metaphors are the tabernacle. The tabernacle was the tent that the people of Israel had constructed because they were nomadic. And this was a tent in which the Ark of the Covenant was held. The Ark of the Covenant was this great big structure, and in it were three items. One was Ten Commandments. Second one was, it gets tougher after the Ten Commandments, but you get part marks for Ten Commandments, right? The second one was the rod of Aaron that blossomed, and the third was the golden bowl that held the manna. Remember the story of the manna on the journey? And in this Ark of the Covenant were these three symbols, and all three of those symbols represented the presence of God for the people of Israel. And so they carried this ark with them all the way as a symbol that God was always with the people. And so they wandered around for centuries until they got to the promised land. And then after David established the kingdom of Israel, Solomon built the temple. And the temple was this huge structure, and inside the temple was the ark. And it was the permanent location which symbolized the presence of God. And so the people of Israel always believed that God's presence was with them. Now in the New Testament, things shift and change, and the presence of God is symbolized by not an ark, not a building, but a person. And the person was known as Emmanuel, which means God with us. You guys are getting this. Yes, absolutely, God with us. And Christ said that no matter where you go, no matter what you have, or where you go, what happens to you, I will be present with you. God is with you through me. And we call this the incarnation. And then when Jesus was crucified and rose, on the last night he was together with his disciples, he said that he's no longer going to be with the disciples, but that he would send a presence. You know the name of that presence? The Holy Spirit. Very good. That this Spirit would come and it would teach you all things and be with you no matter where you are. And that's how God can be with people who are vacationing in Florida, or if they people in Africa and people in Peterborough all at the same time, because the Spirit of God is over the entire face of the earth. And so from the beginning to the end, there is this story that God is with God's people and always calling them back to be in this relationship with God in a healthy and positive way. And the Bible is a book that is a love story. And it's a love that God has for you and I and for all people, because all people are created in the image of God. And so the challenge for you and I is to understand this incredible story, bookended by these two positive and very powerful stories of paradise, which is that unity between heart, mind, spirit, human, God, and creation. And in the book, in between these stories, it says, whenever you try to move from that unity, where you try to break unity with one another, one country against another, one person against another, you have consequences, which leads to the opposite of unity, but conflict. And so God is always, through God's presence in the world, saying, what we want is this unity between one another, with our God, and with creation. And the other stories just tell you, whatever you try to break that, if you try to break with creation, you can do what you want with creation, but there are consequences. And the consequences, if you don't treat creation well, is not good. If you don't treat each other well, there are consequences, and it's not good. If you're not connected in a spiritual connection with God, it's not good. And so the story is about God's love, who just keeps calling us, never gives up on people, just says, come on, folks, and tries to always draw us together. And our challenge is to take that out into the community in a healthy and positive way. So the question is the Bible relevant today? Now, what do you think I'll say to that? What's the answer to that question from my perspective? See, everybody knows what I'm going to say, right? So it doesn't matter if I say yes, but the question is, what makes it relevant if, in fact, we think it is? And that's the important piece that I want to talk about for the remainder of time. The biblical story is relevant not simply because it's something that is given to us by God. The biblical story is relevant because it speaks about human nature. And human nature hasn't changed that much over time. And the biblical story is filled with stories of what you do in our humanness with one another. It says, how do you make a healthy community? You just read the story about the Good Samaritan. Remember that story? Because Jesus goes, in that story, what you have is a definition of who is your neighbor. And your neighbor is someone who's in need, somebody who needs help. Another story says, when you have poor people in your community, what do? And he says, when you feed the least, when you feed the insignificant people, you're feeding me. And all the way through the biblical story are these stories that talk about our humanness and our frailties. And there's all kinds of terrible stories. Stories about people killing each other, stories about unfaithfulness. And all the way through the Bible, which is the interesting part, because you think if you were going to write a story that was affirming spirituality, you would just tell the good stories. But God understands our human nature, and God knows that we have difficulties, and we wander away. And that's why in Timothy, Paul said to Timothy that all the scriptures inspired, and it's meant for you and I. It's meant to teach us and help us to know what is right and what is healthy and what is good, and then how to equip us to take that message out. And so this whole Bible speaks about humankind. And it speaks about our relationship with God or with life, or if God is a problem in your terminology, use energy or force of the universe, whatever you want for the eternal one. But throughout the Bible, there are these stories, and one is the Ten Commandments. Now, the Ten Commandments, people always see as a kind of a negative kind of thing, because it says what? It starts with the words what? Thou shalt not. So don't do this, right? And people often find that really difficult. But if you try to understand what the commandments are, the first part of the Ten Commandments are all about how to live in unity with the Spirit. You know, it talks about worshiping God, about obeying the Sabbath. And then the latter two-thirds are all about how to live in unity with one another. It says, don't lie, don't cheat, don't bear false witness. You know, don't covet what somebody else has. Don't commit adultery. All of those things are there to lift community and say, here are some healthy boundaries. If you live together, and if you can follow these as you live together, it helps you to grow in love. And that latter part talks about these relationships with one another. And so the challenge that we have as a church today is, first of all, to start in a healthy and positive way. And the way we do that is we start by learning and understanding the stories ourselves. It's not just simply reading. If you just read the story and forget it, it's not going to be a lot of help. But reading the story and then understanding what that story means in a practical way so that we can integrate that in our lives. And so we take the biblical stories and say, how does this story relate to me as I live my life in this particular stage? How does it work for someone who is employed in working? And how does it work in our relationships with our partners and our children? How does it work when we're retired? How do we buy things, and what resources do we use, and what are the parameters for which in which we live in harmony with one another? And all these stories are meant to help us grow in our connection with God, that's the vertical part of the cross, and with each other, which is the horizontal part. And then finally, it helps us and encourages us to know that it's time now to share. It's our opportunity to retell the stories. And the place to start is first with yourself. And then secondly, my suggestion, work with your grandkids. Teach them some of the stories. And then try to work to the next tougher generation, which are your children. They're way more challenging than your grandchildren. And then the layer above that, of course, is the community. And so this morning, I want to help you understand that we have this opportunity to tell the untold story. It's not unknown to us, but it's unknown to the people that are beyond the walls of this congregation. And our challenge in the next several years is to first of all learn those stories here. And I'm going to be teaching some very practical steps on how these stories guide our lives so that you'll understand them with greater depth and you'll have the opportunity to share that with the people in your family circles, in your friendship circles, in a healthy and positive way. So that, just like in the first century, when the disciples went out and shared the story, you and I will share the untold story until once again it becomes the old, old story again. Amen.